state in accordance with Public Act 101-0640. Encouraging social distancing, the remote attendance is available for this meeting. It looks like we have a few participants relative to that. And it is the Public Works Committee meeting of Tuesday, December 20th, 2022. Are there any citizen comments? All right, hearing none. Minutes of October 18th, 2022 are for review and acceptance unless there are any amendments or addendums.
I'm good.
All right. October 18th, 2022 minutes as presented. New business item number one, PW 2022-79, our snow operations pre-season report.
Actually, it was a jinx. We weren't going to have a report. But no, just kind of a nice brief overview of kind of how we go about planning for each storm, what are some of our challenges that are, how much salt we have for the year, just kind of a really broad overview, and hopefully an easy read. But if you had any questions, I'd be glad to answer any.
No, and I like what, I think you said something about today.
So. Yeah.
That was kind of good.
All the high points and all the calls you're going to get the next few days. Yeah.
So the fee increased for mailboxes?
Yep. Pegged to inflation. So we passed it in May at $125. So I had Rob calculate what inflation would be between May and today. So I figure we'll probably do this like, you know, November, December every year and certify the dollar amount and keep up with the, whatever costs are.
I remember 75.
Yeah. Well, when 70, that was, I think, 07 we did that.
Yep.
Have no questions outside of that. Kenny, you got any others?
No, I'm good.
Joe, you good? I'd ask Jason, but again, he left. Informational item. Thanks, Eric. New business item number two, PW 2022-80, our Fox Hill Roadway Improvements Rebuild Illinois Project.
All right, detailed memo in your packet along with a few other documents. So we're at the end of the project. The project work is complete, including the additional settlement work that the City Council requested from deconstruction. So all punch list items addressed, all taken care of. So what's in the packet for consideration is approval of a final pay estimate and then a change in plans. These are documents that are needed by IDOT since we're using IDOT funds to close the project out. So the bottom line is the project came in $60,000, a little bit over $60,000 underneath the total our budget for the project. So at this point, we are recommending approval of the change in plans and the final pay estimate as detailed in the memo.
What was the settlement dollar amount? Because it was like $30,000 or something?
Yeah, there were some liquidated damages, and then, right, which was roughly around $30,000. And then there was some additional work, pavement preservation work that we had requested, which that amounted to about $45,000 or $50,000 worth of effort, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, the rejuvenator, right?
Yes, so. Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Joey, you got any questions on it? Chris, you got anything you want to ask?
Let us know if he's, screaming about something.
You're just shouting into the abyss. You probably can hear me, but I can't hear you. Let's see.
Not yet, Chris.
Excellent. Perfect. So it looks like we're got a majority vote request here onto the probably January agenda here. Good with the consent agenda if the group is in agreement.
Yep.
All right.
Yeah.
Excellent. Thanks, Brad.
You're welcome.
And new business item number three, PW2022-81, our Mack truck price increase. Although there's some good news in here, can I say?
Right? Didn't take them long, though. Yeah. Unfortunately, this was the first increase. They would not tell us that there'd be more, sort of like the last one. But they did say that our truck is scheduled to be built and to the vendor early, which is good, and they actually messed up on the increase and only charged $4,000 instead of $5,100. So out of one bad thing, two good things came out of it. That does increase the cost to $143,131 for the cab chassis, and I do recommend that we approve the increase.
Yeah, I'm fine with it.
Yep.
I'm good.
We put that on Tim's on.
Yep. I'm good.
I mean, pretty much.
I think it makes sense. Chris, do you have any questions?
Occurring for the other month anymore. It's become standard.
No questions.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah, so good with consent. Looks like your group is good with that. Excellent. Thanks again, Eric.
Thank you.
Oops. Come on. Move forward. There we go. New business item number four. Technical difficulties. PW2022-82. Discussion on Wendat Ridge Road parking and that change, right?
Yes. So we have a restriction on the north and east side of Wendat Ridge Road to be entirely for the subdivision. One side of the parking that was put in place in 2014, as you can see from the packet memos, basically were put in place because the residents were sick of construction traffic being impeded by double-sided parking up and down the street. And so construction of the subdivision is mostly done, and a few of the residents have reached out to say, hey, I'd like to be able to park on both sides or park in front of my house. Would you consider rescinding it? So our process in the past has been multi-steps. You guys can discuss a proposal, see if it had merit to at least talk about it. You'd vote to start the process. We'd send out letters to everybody that lives up and down the street and say, this is what we think we're going to do. Inviting them to a future meeting or inviting them to submit written comment before the meeting and then hear those comments and then ultimately vote. So if we did that, we would take this to the January 10th City Council meeting for a kickstart, put out the letters the next week or two later, probably do a meeting in February and then vote on it potentially at the end of February from the timing process. We would tell anybody that's called and asked basically to talk to their neighbors. Because if we have a 50-50 split, or if everybody's opposed to it except for this one person, we can save ourselves some time by ferreting that out in advance of the process. But that's the informal process you guys have followed in the past. So that's what we're recommending for this one.
I know Dan and myself have worked with their HOA. This is where this is coming from.
Okay.
So they've had other parking issues because it's forcing everybody on one side. So driveways are getting blocked, and mailboxes are getting blocked, and et cetera. So they would like to have it. And I explained to them what Bart just said, too, about majority, and as long as they're confident that they have it, and they think they do, so.
So do you know about how long that stretch of road is?
It goes from 47 all the way to the end subdivision, where it ends, to the southeast. All right.
It would be
it's several hundred feet.
The north end of the
seat. Yeah, you're probably at least a quarter mile, if not
a
little more. Excellent. Getting a lot of traction from residents.
They've been asking me about this. I thought it would involve a traffic study or something. So I'm like, oh, no. And then as I talked with John, because after his stop sign thing, he said, so I went to him and he said, yeah, he goes, the staff didn't have any problems with it.
If you phrase it as a traffic study, John will probably veto or vote it down. here's the
traffic patterns.
Here's Wendat Ridge Road. So 47 goes all the way through the subdivision, winds back around to the southeast, and then ends over here in the park field.
Got it.
So it's the entire stretches, the north and east side of the road is restricted.
Okay. And technically, I think when you go around there where it ends, that's where Fairhaven or whatever that is goes out the south entrance.
Yeah.
So it makes a big use.
Or Fairfax.
Yeah, Fairfax, yeah.
Yeah, and Woodnut Ridge Road actually continues more south and east than that. That ends into the little cul-de-sac that's there now.
And the other the other point they mentioned to me is, I guess, there's none of this in Raintree at all. And Raintree's a lot larger.
There is.
Yeah,
Fairfax is no parking on one side all the way from Route 47 all the way through to the ends.
Okay.
Parkside has controlled parking on one side. So there's lots of no parking.
I had a real hard time arguing that point when they told me that. I said, well,
yeah,
there's Raintree.
There is.
The residents in Raintree, wherever they're thinking of, even though there are some, just heading that for you. And these are purely demand and response based. There's no proactivity to it.
Okay. Yeah. Fairfax was as a school run.
Okay.
Fairfax was, and so was. It's not Parkside, it's the other big one. Prairie Crossing. Sorry. Those are both near the school, so that's why we're limited. This was just construction.
And it looks like, based on what you pulled up there, Bart, it's pretty much fully built out there. So there's no expectation.
Yeah, it is.
Right.
Except for the back 15 that they just added on to that.
We just added those. They're going to be, that would add to that injector.
The lift station.
Yeah, lift station to, yep. They're going to put townhomes in there, right, or not?
No, those are single family. Okay. 15 single family, but the next parcel to the south and the east is.
Do we perceive that being an issue potentially from a construction traffic?
No. Hopefully we can, you know, ask them to come in off of Fairfax, which is already one side parking.
Okay.
Well, if it did so, did it be constructed too? We would have them route through only their subdivision.
Right.
We would try not to send it through.
Okay. Perfect. If this does happen to progress forward, would it be just as simple as pulling the no parking signs and kind of backfilling?
Yeah, once you vote on it, we would just go pull the no parking signs.
Any of this, is any of the signs is permanent there, or is it all just gravel?
They're and just pop, those are steel signs, right?
They're just the regular old square posts.
Okay.
Yep, we would just go pull them.
Perfect, excellent. Will you be doing that personally, Eric?
I have.
We'll see if we can work that in if we just get all right, excellent. Do you have any questions?
No.
Chris, you got any?
The only question I have is, what's the width of the road from front of curb to front of curb? Do we know that off the overhead?
That is either a 29 or 30 foot back to back. 29 or 30 foot, Chris, I believe. That is not it's not an arterial roadway, but it's not one of the hybrid roads, such as like Heartland.
Right.
Yeah, I believe it's a little bit wider.
So it meets our standard road cross section, but it acts as a collector, more or less.
It's
kind of my concern. My concern is a little bit of, if we undo this, then in a couple of years, we're going to have the same issue where, you know, traffic is a problem getting through, trying to duck in between cars. That kind of thing, emergency services, and we're going back to two-sided parking. I get that the residents are asking for it, but how many are asking for it? That's why I'm glad that we sent out the mailers. Does it just go to those living on the street or to the whole neighborhood?
We usually would only do it for houses that front or side into that street. So like where you have a cul-de-sac, sometimes we've gone like one house deep, but we wouldn't go like two houses deep into the cul-de-sac.
Do we have any input from the fire department or emergency services on access if this goes back to a parking both sides just due to the fact that there's other neighborhoods that feed into this road?
No, not this side.
Was that something we can get some input before the January, or well, I guess before the February meeting?
Yes.
Okay. I just want to have a clarity on that. Beforehand and see what the residents said.
I'm going to assume we have some semblance of a school bus passing through that area and doing pickups too, right? And they're relatively the same size as emergency.
Yeah, vehicle. We had to do some signage at the intersections because people were parking where the school bus picks up. Because of that. So this will hopefully alleviate that problem.
All right. Excellent. So I want to move this forward in January. I think there'll be probably a few more questions, so let's throw it on the standard agenda. You guys are good with that? Okay. Excellent. Yeah. Good. You're not good with it? No.
No, good.
You're good. All right. I like
whatever
it.
You're
confused
want.
With your head. New business item number 5. Thank you again, Eric. PW 2022-83, water capacity presentation and recommendation.
All right, there is a presentation in your packet. Bart has also pulled it up on the screen. So we have been sitting down with Bart and with Eric and his team over the past several months talking about water supply. And this is basically the condition between now and when we expect to receive Lake Michigan water. So wanted to present some information and some recommendations to the committee here tonight. So number one, we'll talk about just a needs assessment overview, and then we'll get into some possible options to bridge the gap between now and when we get Lake Michigan water, and then certainly summarize it at the end here. So, you know, a needs assessment, that's just our term that we use when we evaluate the strength of a water system. Basically, we run it through a series of parameters. We've done this for years. We've done this for the city for the last 15 years. We take existing water use and then project out future demands. So we have a series of five parameters. Three are related to water storage. Two are related to water supply. We run the numbers through, and it kind of spits out some recommendations. So some examples are, can we meet the maximum day demand if we have our largest well out of service? Fire flow demand, can we meet a fire flow demand? Things such as that. So we've been running through the existing data and then running future calculations and presenting that to Bart and Eric here recently. So, and that kind of is leading into our conversation here today. So the two different columns that you see up on the slide at the moment, the current trends, that's the current trends based on past water use patterns. And then the less resource intensive, those are hopefully areas where we can get to through conservation, through just folks remodeling their homes and putting in more efficient toilets and fixtures and things like that. So we're kind of looking at it from a couple different perspectives. So just getting to the bottom line, where we stand today, basically we're predicting that we have about 3,000 PE capacity, population equivalent capacity, with our water supply. That is our concern as we sit here today. Storage, we have plenty, but wells and being able to supply the city with water, that's something that's raising a bit of a red flag. So current trends, we have about 3,000 PE capacity. And then if we're able to step up our water conservation and pull some of our numbers down, of course we have a bigger gap. Potentially up to even 8,000 population available to supply.
Just to be clear, so that 3,000 is based on whatever the population is theoretically today. So 3,000 population future growth. So 1,200 homes, 1,000 homes is what we can construct. People can move into. We get to use the water before we might have issues under current trends.
So we have taken that number, and just as Bart was alluding to, kind of worked with community development. They have a prediction on population increase. So we're projecting somewhere in that 25-26 time frame that we're going to be eating up the year 25-26 that we're going to be eating up that capacity, based on numbers coming from community development. Now this is something that really isn't overly new to us. This is something that we've been talking about for quite some time. If you recall, we had a well and water treatment plant in the CIP. It's been in the CIP for a long time and planned somewhere around this time frame for moving it forward. So this particular slide just kind of indicates the gap that we're coming up against. So again, based on projected population increases, we're looking at the year 25-26. Where we're going to need additional supply. Well, Lake Michigan's probably not going to be available until 28 or 29, realistically. So we're going to have a 2 or 3 year gap where we could have a shortfall. So there's a couple different things we can do, one is to try to step up our conservation efforts, but really that's only going to amount to a small amount that we can actually conserve. Probably still do that anyway, but that also led us into evaluating different options. So there's a couple options up on the screen. So we looked at three different alternatives to be able to provide that stopgap measure between now and when Lake Michigan would become available. And we'll get into a little bit more depth on each of these in a second. But one, provide an interconnect with Montgomery. So there is a section of both systems that is relatively close, just off of Galena Road, just east of Route 47. This is something that's commonly done in the suburban area to provide emergency interconnects. So that's something we looked at. Another alternative, alternative B, is drilling a new well 6, perhaps west of the city hall here somewhere, and then bringing it back to water treatment plant number 4, basically where the public works facility is. That's an existing facility. It has capacity to run 2 wells, so we looked at that. And then the option that we've had in our CIP for quite some time is drilling a new well, building a new water treatment plant. This was originally planned somewhere up in the Bristol Bay area, so potentially popping it up in that area. So a little bit more detail on the interconnect. It's right basically at Dixon Road, only about 700-800 feet of gap of the water main would be needed to be installed. So we've evaluated this at Bart's direction, and certainly it's going to work from a hydraulic perspective. And we've had some initial discussions with Montgomery, and basically, potentially it could be a win-win for both sides. The next slide kind of talks about some advantages and disadvantages. Like I said, could benefit both communities. If Montgomery has an issue, perhaps the city can provide water to Montgomery, certainly vice versa. It's the lowest cost alternative that we looked at. Also has the shortest time as far as implementing the connection. But there is a key point that it only can be used for emergency purposes. So, weeks, months, long term, having an open connection comes with other requirements, which kind of gets into the disadvantages. So the other item, a couple items as far as disadvantages go, is one is that water may not be available to the city, if Montgomery is also experiencing some high water use. So peak demand, typically it's in the summer, very hot, very dry. Montgomery is probably going to be experiencing the same conditions. So they might not have water available to the city, if you need it. The other disadvantage that comes into if you use it more than just an emergency connection is the IEPA is going to force you to do a corrosion control study, because basically you're using another source. That's something we have to do when we switch to Lake Michigan, but if you're going to be relying on water from Montgomery on a consistent basis, they will require that study. So it's timely, costs a lot, adds time, just problematic.
Probably like $700,000 or $800,000 on top of the cost of the plant to do the study to be able to use the plant.
The study's a year long.
Yep.
At least, probably 2 years.
Two years.
So this does require an IGA, not the end of the world. The city and Montgomery's certainly have worked well together in the past, probably not a hurdle, but it's just something that, potentially would have to be done, and you never know, what could happen out of that. So a little bit deeper dive in alternative B here. So again, we would size a new well for 1,000 gallon a minute. We'd potentially drill it just west of City Hall here, and then bring it back to the existing water treatment plant. So it would have to be a substantial run of raw water main back to the plant. But again, that plant does have capacity to run more than one well. And originally it was sized for 3 and 4 back when it was originally constructed. So there are some advantages to this option, and get into a little bit more at this later on the closing slide. But in the future, when we do convert to Lake Michigan, the city will need basically four wells to provide backup. So right now you have four, but we do have, and Eric, long-term concerns with well number four from a not only a capacity standpoint, but a water quality standpoint. So ultimately, we would recommend abandoning well number four.
Which is the one at Tower Lake.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it is open actually to two formations, and that's the only well that's open to two formations, hence the concern on some of the water, the concern on the quality. So some disadvantages, there are two wells would be, we're suggesting that be a little bit closer than what's recommended, but, during short durations, we don't envision that being a problem. You do have that long raw water main, and just by using the existing plant, you don't add another plant, so you don't add redundancy. But this is a stopgap measure. We're trying to get to Lake Michigan, just provide a gap. So perhaps that isn't the biggest disadvantage in the world. So to implement this, 1.5, 2.5 years, it's a price tag of almost $7 million. The cost of drilling a well certainly has risen through the roof here over the last couple of years. Expensive, but it's not throwaway. So we could use that well number six long term, and certainly the raw water main, and keep it coming back to the existing water treatment plant. So save the best for last, certainly the most expensive, drilling a new well, building a new water treatment plant. Those costs have just risen exponentially in the last couple of years due to inflation, shortage of materials. That well, if we go in that direction, certainly could be used as a future backup, same as the other discussion. Certainly adds redundancy to the system. And there's less concern about well interference, but again, I don't think that's a major issue. Our staff is not overly concerned about that. Disadvantages, obvious, most expensive, over $11 million to run that alternative, the longest implementation time too. So to design it, permit it, build it, you're pushing 3 years to be able to do that. Yeah, absolutely.
So this, when you give these implementation times, is that starting at 2026 or 2025 and adding 2.5 years, or is that starting from today?
Tonight.
Yeah, officially.
Right, because otherwise, if you're starting at 25, you're talking 26, 28, you have the emission water in a year or two.
Yep.
Oh, okay.
What's your, how well is the treatment plant that we, unlike we were hooked to the old one?
Oh, it's good. We use it every day for four. It's just made for two wells. We can all
yeah.
We have all the controls there, so all we have to do is
that stuff's pretty up to date and everything.
The majority of that well, or the water treatment plant, was built in 05?
Oh, okay.
Six.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Newer. Yep, 06.
So either way, between A, B, and C, it's roughly the same time frame. It's between 2.5 years to 3 years if you include this study that we have to do with Montgomery, right?
Well, no, I think we can get things done quicker than
that.
Maybe we'll just pop on some additional considerations, and then we can come back to the summary slide. And what we've discussed with Bart and Eric and what we're recommending at this point. So, just some things to think about. I've already mentioned a couple, that long-term backup supply needs. So again, the calculations are projecting that 2050, we're going to need four wells for backup after we convert to Lake Michigan. So again, you currently have four. We're concerned about the long-term performance of well number four. If we move forward with a new well number six, that would just replace number four,
yeah.
And then we're set for the long term. Talked about the population projections coming from community development. The city added roughly 500 or a little bit more than that in 2022. The projections that we've seen from them again, put us in you know, around that 25, 26,000 population, you know, in 2 or 3 years from now. So that would eat up our capacity that we have on the supply side. And that does not include potential industrial development, which, you know, potentially may be occurring along El Domain Road. There's talk of having some discussions coming up first quarter with the city council, and that, you know, certainly would eat into that capacity, you know, kind of speed things up, if you will. So there, kind of getting Matt, back to your question, Matt, and kind of putting it all on one page there, the comparison between the three alternatives. The interconnect, you know, that would be relatively quick. Certainly we think we can get that done faster than 2 years. Probably the same way with well six and connecting it to well number four. If we were to move forward, certainly we think we can get that done probably sooner than 2.5 years. It's probably closer to 1.5 years. But no question, the well and water treatment plants, new one, that's definitely pushing 2.5, 3 years and definitely out there the most. So, you know, at this point, kind of going down to the next slide and our immediate recommendation, what we're recommending is that we move forward with the new well. And again, drilling it, you know, maybe somewhere west of City Hall here and running it back to the water treatment plant at number four. And then that serves a purpose for not only short term, but also long term, and post Lake Michigan connection, the best selection at this point. We do, as kind of a near future recommendation, also recommend eventually making that connection with Montgomery. It's not only beneficial for them, beneficial for the city, but a little too much risk, we felt, from the city's perspective, just going with that route by itself, because again, we're not guaranteed that that capacity is going to be available when we need it.
And even when it is available, it would be small. It would not be enough to satisfy our current demand. And that's why we didn't proceed forward with the corrosion control study. You know, even though it's the cheapest option, even with that, it just doesn't make sense longer. Right.
So Matt, does that kind of help answer your question?
Yep, it does.
Popped up?
Okay. Yep, thank you.
So you're suggesting A and B?
More or less. B now, and A, planning for that in the future.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And when we have Lake Michigan water, well, it'll be the same water source, but it'll be nice and interconnected.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, you know, if Lake Michigan, if we have the water and all of a sudden the line goes down that's coming to the city, then we can connect into Montgomery.
Skin loop it in.
Right, right. So, and that is common with other Lake Michigan users, again, in the suburbs that they have that interconnect. Yeah, recommendation is kind of package it up with all the other Lake Michigan improvements when those move forward.
Yeah. Half a million or 800,000 of that little number ain't gonna make much of a difference.
No.
You think you can get Montgomery to bike down on some of that? Possibly?
On cost?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And that 800,000 is really 1.5 million.
Oh, was it?
It's 800,000 plus this
if
other.
If you include the study.
Yeah, the other study, which is another 700,000.
If we do it just for emergency uses, we have to not study.
Correct.
All right, but if you're going to use it for any other purpose, you got to add that 700,000 to that number.
That is
1.5 million.
Yeah.
Right. So if we want, hopefully you can cut it in half and like get done about 500 or so.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the total cost. That's not, 50-50 right. Split with my company.
Really?
Yeah.
We're still online. Chris, can you still hear us?
Yes, I can.
Oh, right. Okay, great.
Well, while you can hear us, do you have any questions, Chris?
No, I wanted to listen to this mostly, but the one part I have a question on for the corrosion study.
Yeah.
Is that something that will be utilized for the Lake Michigan water, or is it a throwaway cost?
That would be a throwaway cost, Chris, because basically with the Lake Michigan option, you have to use water from DuPage DuPage Water. So what's
so in terms of doing the corrosion study, that's after, we have to make sure that our systems are all compatible for the DuPage, but that's an after the fact. Once we're connected, we have to make sure the systems are not going to have a corrosion issue.
Yeah, so basically, if you're changing sources, so for the Lake Michigan option, we have to do the corrosion control study. That's some things that we've talked about in the past. So basically, we have to take water from DuPage Water and run it through different pipes that the city has, and then run a whole series of tests to make sure that we're not causing damage within the system. So we have to do that regardless since we're going to Lake Michigan. The point on these slides with the Montgomery Interconnect is that we can use it for emergency purposes, but if it were to be open for a substantial period of time, the IEPA is going to treat that as another source. And then we would have to basically take Montgomery water. Likewise, they would also have to do the same for Yorkville water and run it through each respective system and then run the same calculation. So it's a very long process. It's very expensive. Not something we would recommend since ultimately we're changing sources anyway to Lake Michigan.
Yeah. So just to summarize that, you have to run a study on each source that you use. So we do have to do one for Lake Michigan, but if we were using Montgomery, we'd have to do another one for Montgomery. And you also have heard that phrase before because we've got it in our capital improvement plan, in our budget, to do the study here in the near term. And it's what's in the earmark in the federal bill for $1.8 million from Lord Underwood to do a corrosion control study in Oswego, Montgomery, and Yorkville, splitting in three ways. So hopefully by this weekend, we'll have approved $600,000 that we'll be able to spend on a corrosion control study for Lake Michigan purposes.
Thanks, Brad. Did that answer your question appropriately, Chris?
Yeah, that works for me. I just wanted to make sure that's it. Yeah. We're going to keep that would be a temporary thing. We're not fully integrating it into our system.
Yep.
I just want to make sure that's what I was hearing.
Yep, correct.
And just, well, kind of with the Montgomery thing here.
Yeah, go for it.
So, I know where I work, we try to avoid stubs. So if you have a stub, you jumper them so the water continues to flow.
Correct.
Would that be the same with this? Water would always be flowing. It wouldn't be like a, it would never become a stagnant or, non-flow, right?
Correct. Yeah, we'd have to incorporate that into the design, right. Exactly. We do the same. I know Eric is very conscious of that. So that's something that we would incorporate into the ultimate design to keep it fresh.
Yes, to keep
correct.
It moving. Cause it,
absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, because I know that's a big thing.
Absolutely, yeah, good point.
With that.
No dead ends.
No dead ends.
You bypass.
That's what we do, bypass the ends.
Yeah,
just tie it.
We'll tie it back to itself so it keeps it.
That's how we do it. Okay. Next presentation.
You have any questions? Good. All right, excellent. Chris, you all good?
Who gets to do this study to make sure that the water can go through the ductal pipe that's on one side of the street versus the other?
Yeah, that's exactly what we're going to do.
All right, excellent.
Yeah. So does this go to the whole council, this presentation as well?
Yeah, it can if everybody wants to hear it. I definitely was going to forward it to everybody. And really, the proposals to do the well and then do the interconnect are going to be part of the capital improvement plan that we're planning to put in the budget proposal. So, to the extent that you feel like the other four or five
they should be seeing it for these kind
need
numbers.
That in order to vote on it, we're happy to give the presentation again. But we figured we'd start here first because right. It was ready to go and we don't have another meeting until January 10th.
Thoughts? I mean, are you going to vote on the last option?
I think what? No, I'm talking about like DNO node, right word, I mean.
I think we could forward it to him, but I don't see the last one anybody passing it, so I don't think we can cut that out.
Yeah. Okay. Good.
You know, I don't think it has to be an official presentation for us.
All right. No, yeah. I just want to make sure that, like, he knows.
Oh, yeah. No, they would know before we.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to put this, take us further.
Put it on
I didn't see those numbers.
Yeah, I think that, I think forwarding it makes sense. I could see Craig having questions.
Oh, yeah. I do, too.
For sure. So.
Yeah. I think Craig will.
So, and to the full council in January?
I think the full council should see this presentation somehow, whether you guys send it to them and they look
at it. Yeah, I would say just send it to them.
I would say send it to them. Yeah, and if we end up getting a lot of questions, then we'll...
Then we can...
Perfect.
Yeah, so something that we've talked about, too, is there's probably going to be a series of updates come January and February in regard to the whole water system. So, you know, depending on how you want to play it, you know, we could incorporate some of this into that.
Yeah,
if that makes sense.
Yeah, so if you want to put the title of the email, Joe wanted you to see this, then
yeah.
I'll definitely read it.
Right.
Excellent. Good discussion. New business item number 6. This one should be lively too. BW 2022-84, the Lake Michigan allocation presentation.
All right, we thought it would be appropriate and timely to update the committee on where we're at with the application and what are some of the next steps that are coming up. So that's why Irene is here. She's been instrumental in assisting the city on working through the process and getting ultimately the permit with IDNR. So the agenda, just kind of talk through where we're at, what's been happening. Kind of again refresh the committee on the regulatory requirements. There's been some items that IDNR has stressed. I want to make sure we bring that back to the committee and the council. And then kind of give a brief overview of the water audit process, which we kind of flashed in front of you a year ago. We actually have the 21 water year audit. We'll flash that information in front of you and then talk about some key non-revenue plan initiatives, which are very near and dear to IDNR, and we'll go through that in detail here. All right, so where are we at? So we submitted back in April of this year. There was a pre-hearing number one with just the attorneys in June. Second pre-hearing, which Irene, certainly my staff, Eric, and Bart all participated in. That's where we got the most feedback from IDNR. And now we are working to resubmit based on their feedback. And our target is February. After this meeting, we do plan on bringing this to the full city council on the 10th to basically go through the same thing. So we'll be doing that. And again, resubmitting in February for pre-hearing number 3 coming up in April 2023. So goal, of course, is to get the allocation. Right now, that's looking like June, July is our best guess at this point.
Fun fact, this October 21st is the day we learned about the CMAP issue. Because of that hearing.
Of that hearing.
Yes.
Yep. The rest.
Are you going to be quizzed on that fact?
We're not. Just a quick note on that. One of the meetings in D.C. last week was with FDA, and the socioeconomic forecast from metropolitan planning organizations came up unprompted from the FDA, and how we need to make sure that their forecasts are correct, because the feds award grants and distribute funds based on these forecasts, and to really dial in and I about
yeah. I do have one if you'd like to know. If you'd like to know on the CMAP. So CMAP sent a letter to IDNR saying use the 2018 population projections. They're still reworking the 2022 ones. So that's what we're going on, is that the letter that was sent by CMAP to IDNR.
So we're good for the water project. We just make it a short amount of a highway project or a metro project at some point decades from now because the other growth patterns are forecasting. But I digress.
All right. All right, back to the permit requirement. So you guys know this, you've heard this before, but basically all Lake Michigan users need a permit. The IDNR issues and regulates withdrawals from Lake Michigan. You've heard us talk about this, non-revenue water must be less than 10%. Everything is calculated by water year with IDNR. So basically that is follows a federal fiscal year. So October 1 to September 30. So based on that calculation, the city's last full year, we were at 14.2% water loss.
So?
Yep, go ahead.
This is a number we've heard recently about Montgomery being like 22 or 24%.
That's correct.
So, okay, and where's the Oswego at?
Less than 10%.
They're less than 10%. Okay, so how does this work with the three towns if Montgomery has a hard time getting that down to 10%?
Yeah. So, yeah, you know, we're instrumental in, with Montgomery and what they're doing. So they're they have more challenges, certainly, than the city does. And they have quite an effort that's in front of them to try to get below 10%. So they're working on their non-revenue reduction plan, their loss reduction plan, and they have a significant amount of water main to be replaced. So they're also considering kind of delaying the timing of connecting to Lake Michigan. So they'll still pay for the infrastructure to come out, but they will not connect because they want a little bit extra time to be able to try to get down closer to that 10%.
So we would actually, Oswego and Yorkville might be using it prior to Montgomery ever even.
That's correct.
Is that like years or is that?
No.
Yes.
Maybe a year or two.
Yeah.
It's not that much.
Yeah.
And the most importantly is the DuPage Water Commission is okay with that.
Yeah. Okay.
And the other piece of it is, and I know Brad will go into it in a little bit, is this why this water year is so important, because you can do the improvements this past summer, but you're doing your calculations based on the end of September, right? So you're not getting the full benefit of the improvements that you make in one summer until the following year.
Because I was just thinking, if we go into a recession or something, and Montgomery just says we can't meet this, and we don't, you know, they throw their hands up. What happens then?
So they didn't. I was at their council meeting a week or two ago. This all done 2 weeks ago, and their city council, their president or mayor, they're still very much in favor of moving forward.
So they would cut somewhere else in their budget or something out.
They're not going to be able to cut to get there. I'm giving away Brad's thunder here, but the amount of money that Montgomery has to spend on water main improvements in the next 4 or 5 years is more expensive than their actual Lake Michigan transmission main cost, and it's probably bigger than their entire annual budget put together.
Sooner rather than later, they're even in their unbelievable spending, they're going to ramp it high to go down, so that they can start seeing the benefits of the improvement.
No wonder they want that
cost. Do we do an NRW every year?
You will be required moving forward to do one every year to prove to the IDNR that you're going to be less than 10%.
Do we know in 2020 where we were at relative to 2020?
Yeah, actually we have some slides coming up.
Okay.
So we wanted to bring forth a couple takeaways. And some of these things we heard over and over again during the proceedings. So, you know, number one, IDNR wanted to, again, make it known that each permittee loses autonomy, due to regulatory requirements. So basically, you're at their mercy. If you're not keeping up with your non-revenue water loss, they may suggest very strongly that you increase your water main replacement and things like that. To keep it below 10%. So again, they just wanted to make sure that the city and city council fully understood that. Certainly we already have talked about that in the past. but we wanted to make sure it was on this PowerPoint to drive it back home.
Whereas now we have no, or almost no regulatory oversight. Yeah. We can pump as much water as we want. Our water loss can be ridiculously high, but they have now, you know, oversight and authority over us as a result of it.
Yep. So, and they made, you know, a statement, and that statement is in the next bullet point.
No, this is the statute.
Or the statute, sorry. So that's the exact language. And, you know, their suggestion from the meeting that we had was just kind of blindly replace all water main pre-1980 that the city may have. So we'll get into that in a little bit more. And again, that was their way of trying to push the city to make sure you had less than 10% water loss. But we'll get into our recommendations on that in a few moments here. Couple more takeaways is, you know, they had some questions on the Fox River alternatives. They wanted us to kind of go back, take another couple look at some things, provide some additional support. So we're certainly doing that as a part of our resubmittal and working through those items. And basically the two, areas that kind of come to play now are working on the Fox River connection and certainly the connection to DWC, and that's kind of what we're focusing on our resubmittal. So, you know, they noted that if you go to the Fox River, you know, they don't have a 10% water loss requirement, so maybe your water main replacement is not the same. So they just kind of wanted us to take all those things into account during our resubmittal, and we're having discussions amongst us to make sure we're all on the same page. Bart already talked about the population situation there, and we do have direction. As Irene has pointed out, we have been directed to use the 2018 numbers, which certainly is important from a long-term planning standpoint. And then they had some other minor comments, but just the point of bringing these up is that, you know, they had dozens of comments, and we're taking those into account. We've talked about some responses, and we're working on a new draft to get that back into them. So, yeah, just kind of getting into a couple more requirements from a regulatory standpoint, some of which we've already talked about. So basically, moving forward, every year we're going to have to collect data, submit it to IDNR, and that includes an annual water audit. And if we have water loss greater than 10%, we need to submit basically a non-revenue reduction plan to IDNR to support and provide, you know, the city's plan for reducing. So, you know, York or Oswego doesn't have to do that because they don't have, they have less than 10%, so they don't have to prepare a plan. But in the case of Montgomery and the city, we have to prepare a plan and submit that. And what's in that plan, again, is highlighted in a few more slides.
Once we got below 10%, then we wouldn't have to do it either, right?
Correct. However, you have to stay below 10%. If you go above 10%, then you have to do another plan.
I don't want to jinx any community, but what they said to Oswego was, even before you come online with DuPage Water Commission, we want you to do an annual water audit every year going forward. So I expect the same. I mean, we're going to have to do it to show your reduction, anyway, but you're going to still want it.
This water audit, is that done by or is it done internally by staff? Or does it have to be done by...
It's something that... right now my office is doing.
Right, we send all our data to them, and then they send it into the...
Okay, I didn't know if it had to be from an outside organization.
And we send monthly reports to the IEPA now, so they know how much water we pump anyway. It's not the DNR, I get that, but we still submit what we pump now.
Yeah, I've got some boring slides that'll walk through the water audits, so you'll be experts on that here in a second. But, you know, they're going to want to coordinate conservation activities too, make sure that the city's staying on top of that and doing what you said you were going to do. And then at the bottom, again, ongoing infrastructure improvements, making sure you're in compliance and staying below that 10%. All right, Ken, ready for the water audit background? So, you know, basically it's it's running it through a series of calculations, how much water is treated versus billed, and doing an analysis. So the American Water Works Association, AWWA, came up with this M36 water audit form within the last several years, and that is the official form that's used to calculate your water loss.
Does Chicago have to do that?
Yeah. So, you know, every Lake Michigan user has to go through this, and there's really a big push throughout the country to do this calculation and to, you know, realize lost water and make some adjustments. So, you know, basically it falls into three different buckets on the next slide there, Bart. So you have unbilled authorized use. So, you know, that's like hydrant flushing, you know, the fire department using some water, things such as that. You have your apparent losses, which basically, you know, bad water meters, inaccuracies, just data error, theft. And then you have your real losses, which falls into, or those types of items fall into, like water main breaks, service line issues, you know, overflowing your storage tank, things such as that. So very high level, but you know, they already have an analysis that's already set up. You just have to put the data into the different buckets.
He makes that sound easy. There's a lot of data that goes into those buckets.
Yeah, so I guess just to elaborate on your question, Ken. You know, we get the information from Eric and from Rob, and we take that information, put it into the spreadsheet, run the analysis, run the numbers. Typically, there's some back and forth, and ultimately it comes up with the water audit. So, you know, where the city has stood, that's the graph that's currently up. That kind of gives the history. So it's the gray dashed line is the percent. So back, you know, 2014 to 2018, you were either below or right at the 10% water loss. And then it started to creep up here over the last couple years. 2013, there was quite a bit, for whatever reason or another, but it's generally been less than that ever since. So again, right now, your last water year, you were a little bit above 14.2%. So, you know, the buckets where it currently falls into, you know, right now, you know, the majority of it is into that real loss. So water main breaks, leaks in the system. Eric and his team have been very aggressive this year on tracking down leaks. They've done some leak detection throughout the city. They made a number of repairs. So that's not reflected in these numbers, but will be reflective in the next one that we do. So since we're greater than 10%, we mentioned that we have to do a reduction plan. And we did submit a draft, along with our application originally. And it's going to be slightly modified as we resubmit it. So some of this you've already seen about a year ago. The first thing is, you know, we need to update several meters. So we need accurate data. It's important to get accurate data to be able to use it in these calculations. So that's something that's been in the CIP, is in the CIP moving forward. And, you know, Eric and his team are on top of that. In addition to that, consistently checking the master meters at the water treatment plants to make sure that they're accurate, because that is also very critical, and that's now being done on an annual basis.
Yeah, I've gained like a lot of gain to that.
Yeah. So, you know, some other ultimate items is to ultimately improve billing software and updates. I know there's discussion already on that. I think it's already budgeted moving forward. Trying to track unbilled, unmetered water a bit better. So I know there's already been movements from the public works side to do that. Checking in with the fire districts, flushing hydrants, construction use, just having a meter on it to be able to calculate that better certainly is going to help. Next slide, we already talked about the leak detection, and the entire city has now been detected, right? And there were some areas early in the year that you found and have corrected?
Correct. There are still a few out there. This last survey just got completed. We did 100 miles, and there was only 5 hydrant leaks and 2 service leaks on the north side of town. So
and what's the standard?
Oh, that's well below what we...
That's why I asked.
Well below what we thought. We still have a couple on the south side that we actually are going to wrap up in our water main replacement program because it's something that we can't do. It's in a four-way, in a four-way T of water main, 12-inch water main.
But yeah, you're attacking those known areas and then have plans to address the ones that have popped up. And that's something that the city has to commit to do on an annual basis. So you have to do a water audit, you have to do leak detection moving forward.
Each year. So. And we are replacing many of the worst water mains, so we should see a very solid decrease next year in our audit.
Why, just replacing the bad old ones?
Yeah, well, East Main Street was probably one of our worst.
Okay.
Yeah, we would have 2 or 3 breaks a year, and on that sandy soil over there, it doesn't always come up to the top right away. It could be leaking for weeks before we see it.
How many of these old meters are still out there?
Thousands.
Thousands?
Thousands. We actually had $400,000 budgeted for this year. We could not get enough meters, so we couldn't replace them.
So if the meters and the projects we've done,
we should get under 10.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. What, get us under 10?
Should be very close, and then we just have to maintain it. And
so meters is a big thing.
Absolutely could be a big thing. We've got some meters in town that are probably over 25 years old.
Which will register a 25% water loss?
We found with raging waves before we replaced all their meters on their low flow, they were gaining 30%. They were getting 30% extra water. So that's why we need to tighten up the meters.
Yeah, the next slide, Bart. So kind of getting back to some comments that IDNR had in the pre-hearing. So they were pretty firm on suggesting the city step up its water main replacement program beyond what we had initially planned. So on the left, submittal number one, that is what we originally submitted. So we were replacing some older water main, all the 1950s. And older, and then attacking some of the high break areas. So we're running between $1-1.5 million a year for the next 5 years. And the next slide has a summary, but before we get to that, the recommendation was suggested to do 1980s and older. So right now, our plan is to replace all pre-1970s water main and include some high break areas. There's some 1980s water main that does not have high breaks, and in our opinion, that might be a little bit too aggressive to go after. The 5-year plan is a substantial increase in the amount of water main to be replaced, but we do not see a way around it from the comments from IDNR. So the next slide is just kind of a side-by-side comparison of the dollar value and length. So basically, we're tripling the length, 2.5 miles originally, 7.7 with the new plan, and adding about $12 million plus or minus to the replacement plan. So this includes being very aggressive in the first 3 years, and that comes back to the comment that Irene made earlier, is that basically we have to be below 10% 2 years prior to our anticipated connection time, because we have to have a year's worth of good data, and then we have to produce the audit and then submit it in to IEDNR. So that's why if we're anticipating 2028 or so, being very aggressive in the first 3 years to try to get as much water main replacement done, try to give ourselves some assurance that we're going to get below that 10%, that is something that we're recommending.
Is most of this under the roads too?
Yes.
So
Not all, but a good, most of it is.
So is that going to change our...
And if not, under the roads, enough under
close
the roads.
Close enough, yeah. So is that going to change our road to better roads program down the line then too?
It's...
We've been trying to stack them on top of each other and put as much as we can on the water main project. But there will be some, like Orange Street, I believe, half the pavement was done under the water project, half was done under the road to better road. So we were very conscious of that.
Is the old part of town, the homes there, are they, is that all, is there, is it almost all under the road there too?
Yes.
And if not, it's right on the edge of the road.
That's what I was wondering.
Yeah.
If it was on the edge, maybe the older part of town.
Some's right down, some's under the pavement, some are off the edge. It just depends on which subdivision, which street.
Yeah, usually you end up building it in the road anyway because you have mature trees that are in the parkway.
Right.
And there's other obstacles.
The new one will be in the road for sure.
So what we try to do is, try to time that.
Right.
And, if there was a street we did relatively recently, we kind of pushed that out as best as we could. It does affect next year's road program.
Okay.
So some of the streets that we were targeting, like Center, south of us here, there's some older water main there. So we're going to recommend contract B for next year and then take care of that. The road will still be done, but just under different funding. It'll be done through the water fund, and then we'll have to pick some additional road funds, project areas.
I'm thinking of Adrian and Morgan, and we did all those streets over there not that long ago.
Correct.
So does that mean that, because I know your thing showed them in there.
Correct. So we try to push those a little bit later on. We try to get some more use out of those streets.
Okay.
Yeah.
And our recent ones, Ken, such as Ridge Street, we did do the street when we did the water main.
Okay.
So we've been trying to do that for probably the last 5 years or so.
Yeah.
How's the lead service survey going?
Great.
Yes.
We're way lower.
How many have we found?
We just asked for an update today. I think there were six in question, but I don't think there was any confirmed yet.
Yeah, I think we're still sitting at zero. Yeah.
That's what we were hoping for. We didn't see any.
Right.
Yeah, because that could become a mess in this project too. Yeah.
Yes.
But
We're so far.
Six, really.
Mm-hmm. And those were mostly just questions. Most of what we go see, and they're not. They're galvanized.
Cool.
Yeah. So we're happy. They're not so happy. Cause
I don't know that I've ever ran across one.
The only thing we ever found were goosenecks on the surface, but the surfaces were always galvanized or copper.
So we have a graphic at the end that kind of depicts the timeline that we'll get to, which is a couple more things about the non-revenue reduction plan. So we have to establish a water loss team. So at the moment, we've been meeting with Eric and John, and they've been championing it. From the city side, so we need to be quarterly to make sure we're staying on top of what we state that we're going to do. There's that annual water audit. We have to certainly continue doing that from here on forward. And then we're going to have to monitor our progress, and certainly we plan to be successful and keep on top of that. So, things we've already talked about, but just kind of putting it on a summary page, improving how we track information, including, updating billing software, updating our meters, staying on top of calibration, and then committing to the annual leak detection, as well as increasing the water main replacement program. So all a part of the overall plan to get below 10%. So this slide was the one I was referring to, and kind of goes back to some comments that Irene made it earlier. Kind of highlights the need to be very aggressive over the next 3 years. Basically need to complete those improvements. Then you have a nice clean year of data. Then you perform the water audit and get that submitted in to IDNR so they can analyze. So that's just something that they're certainly looking for. They've commented on that to us. So our plan is to reflect that in our resubmittal. So, yeah, where do we go from here? Mentioned that we do plan on updating the full city council coming in January, if that still works out. That's the plan. There's potentially a new resolution that we still need to discuss, but there's maybe some specific language that was not in the original resolution that we may want to put in this one. So that's something we'll work with Irene and Bart to get that hammered out. And then again, plan is to resubmit by February 14th and then move toward that additional pre-hearing in early April. So we have suggested have Bart's mentioned it at the last city council meeting to potentially bump up the budget for the water main replacement for next year. Talked about reasons why to be aggressive. We've identified some areas, basically with double the program from roughly 1.6, double it to 3.2. So if that's something that we're willing to move forward with, we may have to start the design early in the year so we can get it permitted and built toward the end of the construction season next year.
So just to reiterate that first next step on this slide. So we approved a resolution last year that said, these are the reasons why we're choosing Lake Michigan, et cetera. We submitted that as part of our IDNR application. And what we understood from the line of questioning and some of the statements that were being made was that they didn't believe that our Lake Michigan costs were high enough, that our Fox River costs were too high, so they wanted those to go down. And it appeared to us like skepticism that our community would have been okay with Lake Michigan if the price differential between Fox River and Lake Michigan was much higher. And, I tried to relay to the pre-hearing, some of the comments that were made in the public hearing, and, obviously everybody was overwhelmingly in favor of Lake Michigan, not for price reasons, was if I'm spending this much money for a project, I want the best quality water at the end of it.
I hear that all the time.
Yes. And so they said, fine, whatever. And so we're basically just going to reiterate those points in a new resolution that says, okay, fine, if you increased, Lake Michigan double, or if you reduced the Fox River option, the community is still behind this. Or, this isn't a price discussion. This is water quality, sustainability, long-term operational needs, security issues. It's all those things. We don't have to operate a water treatment plant. Just basically doubling down and saying, no, we understand these points that you're raising. This is why we're going with it. Yeah.
Well, the PR, if you turn around and raise Lake Michigan costs, all of a sudden you jump them up a lot, there would be some PR on why the numbers have changed that much.
For sure.
So you better have a reason
for sure.
Why you're doing it.
And that's one of the things we told IDNR in the pre-hearing. I mentioned Montgomery looking at 9 digits of water main replacement on a $50 million project, of their eventual costs. That's, in my mind, a heavy-handed way to say, you have to get from 28% down to 10%, just replace your water mains. It, disregards leak detection, disregards water main replacement. All these other things you can do, conservation efforts, PR. You can crack down on unauthorized users of water to get below 10% without saying I'm going to spend $100 million in 4 years on water main replacements. So for us, it's only $20 million, but when you're talking about the water rates that we've been talking about doubling or tripling over time, on a $100 million project, when you add $20 million on there, it still is not not great. So I understand why they're pushing for it, because they've had issues in the past and there have been some towns that have flaunted it probably over the past few decades, but it doesn't look like they're giving us really any leeway or really creativity to come up with our own academic solution. So we're doing our best basically to just say, we've heard you, we're going to give you a little bit, but we think that we think that we can come under 10% if we do X, Y, and Z as opposed to just X. So, yeah, so the good news is that I am getting ahead of myself again. We met with the head of WIFIA on Thursday of last week. They are much more flexible with funding and structuring a loan and how you can get a loan than we had anticipated. to the tune where we may be able to actually like shove all our costs that we've incurred in the past, current, and in the future for the Environmental Commission of Water Project to do a Whitfield loan that's 80% funded by the federal government. So it has to be repaid, but they said to us specifically, you know, affordability for residents is one of their main factors in giving these loans. There's a lot of money, they have a lot of flexibility. So we're hopeful that when we get into the nuts and bolts of the details, we're going to be able to structure something that maybe can roll in a water rate increase that's much lower than what we've been talking about over potentially, you know, a few decades, as opposed to 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, right.
So, slowly. Yep.
So. I like it. All right.
And this one will be at City Council January
10th. Yep.
Do you have questions?
No.
Okay.
No, I think I'm good.
Chris still on?
Chris?
Chris, do you have any questions? Oh, I fell asleep.
Well, there's so much water you can take.
We know it's a lot of information. Yeah.
He'll fax us if he has any questions.
Yeah, that's smart.
All right. Thanks, Brad. Thanks. Thanks, Eric. Thanks, Mark. Thanks, everybody. All right. New business item number 7, PW 2022-85, the Mill Road Construction Change Order Consideration Balancing.
All right. Another project coming to a close. So the Mill Road reconstruction project is complete. All punch list items have been addressed. This was the project with the construction. You know, as normal, we bring forth a balancing change order, kind of close out the project accounting. And we are happy to bring forth a decrease in almost $170,000 to the original contract price. And certainly recommending the city move ahead and approve this change order. Once this is done, we'll recommend the final pay estimate to the contractor, get the final paperwork in, make our final payment, and officially close the project out. One thing to mention, there is some right-of-way that the city needs to vacate. If you recall, we realigned Mill Road to line it up with the park. So there was some old right-of-way that we need to vacate. And we have to do that after the project is done. So now it's done. Contractor did all the work that they needed to do to kind of clean up the area. So we will work with Kathy on bringing that forward. It's probably going to come back in January to then close that out.
No questions? Great result. Consent agenda. Excellent. That concludes our 7 new business items. There are no old business items. Is there any additional business?
Yeah.
All right. That's what we'll let you know.
I talked to you about representatives come from Circle Center and the school board about their problem with the road and traffic. They couldn't make this meeting, obviously, because it was close to the holidays. They did express interest in wanting to come next time in front of Circle Center, that when they're doing buses, it just backs up and blocks the entire lane. Now we have people going around them, going the wrong way on the incoming traffic. So they're just looking for solutions, maybe if they have to reroute how they do their buses or whatever, if we can give them a hand, and maybe looking at, objectively looking at some traffic, maybe not a study, but we got some suggestions, just because they don't have engineers and stuff that do that. But I know the police department's out there often, so they're just hoping
this to come. From Circle Center or YIS?
Well, YIS too, but that's a state road. There's less we have control.
Oh, all right.
But it's more dangerous.
Yes, but more dangerous.
Yeah, that was worse. Yeah.
I would assume that they're just, and those can't be the only two schools that they have issues with.
They're not.
Right. So I think they're just looking for some help on our end, maybe some solutions, just get a ball rolling.
We will make contact with them. I know JJ's been in touch with them, but we'll
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's too. So if they want to come to the meeting too, that's fine.
Right. I've had a concerned citizen that's very close to me considering why we can put it on the agenda. So, set up.
Do you know if they've reached out to the school district at all?
Yes, like somebody was from the school district was going to come here.
Okay.
Okay.
I can't think of off the top of my head their name.
There have been complaints in the area. Yeah. You know, they were just in touch with us recently, like a week and a half ago. Okay. And just for a little picture, there was an email tonight on Autumn Creek. So, same issue.
Oh, there you go.
So, yeah. Happens everywhere.
Yeah.
Especially in winter when everybody drives their students.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, it might be as simple as telling, because principals get to pretty much dictate where the buses and everything go.
Yeah.
And there might be some issues at schools about where new principals put stuff, so I guess they'll just looking for some bagging somehow.
Sure.
Do we ever get any right here with the three schools?
Oh.
Close by.
Yes, we do.
Yeah.
That's always been a nightmare.
Yeah.
Oh, so much better now though. The game farm's done.
Yeah.
You know, but on the same thing, you know, what I noticed is, because the way I did 47 to turning lane, the left turn for school buses coming this way, they end up blocking the inner lane on 47 because they're trying to turn, and they got cars and everything, and so that bus actually blocks two lanes of traffic. That turning lane should start down further.
Back.
Yeah.
Spring Street.
So you kind of get over in there. Cause, like this morning I noticed it. The bus was sticking out on the one side of 47 and he was in the turning lane for the left turn.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and it happens actually more than you imagine. I see it in the morning.
Well, I'm sure. I'm usually
especially if you get two buses. If you get back-to-back buses, then the one's in there and the other one's like this.
And I know I get complaints from my parents and stuff about it's not just the public schools either, it's the private ones too.
Parkview has a huge enrollment. That's a big trouble. Maybe.
Yeah, but they know the little shortcut.
Yeah, their little shortcut now backs up on the game farm.
Because I think that shortcut too.
Yeah.
Give away your secrets, Ken.
Well, I don't know how you're going to fix it.
Well, that's it too.
So probably more to come in January then.
Yeah, obviously.
Okay. As the weather continues to have fun at that time too. Excellent. Thanks, Joe. Any additional business outside of that additional business?
No, I'm good.
We're good. Ken, you got anything?
Nope.
All right. Excellent. Chris, last time calling in, you got anything?
I'm good.
All right, sir. With that, let's call the meeting to a close at 7:24.
Thank you.
Everybody have a good night.
Thanks.
Thank you.
You too.
Good holidays.
Yeah.